don't know if that's my first tweet, but it probably is. Yeah, digesting a burrito. There you go. Yeah.
Look at me with my dumb tweets. Eating a baked potato and green beans with, you know, like.
Hi, it's me. I'm on Twitter. For none of my followers at the time.
Okay. Continuing to work on things that will apparently destroy modern society. I mean, that's a real hit by the gift of prophecy in the face type situation.
The social media platform Twitter is now in the hands of the world's richest person. Elon Musk completed the takeover, which is worth more than £38 billion, and swiftly began making changes at the company.
On the 28th of October, 2022, Elon Musk bought Twitter, the most disruptive social media platform the world has ever seen. Musk scrapped many of its controls on hate speech, reinstated banned accounts, and changed the name to X.
Andrew Tate is back on Twitter.
It's good to be back on Twitter.
Racist, misogynist, and anti-Semitic tweets from Tommy Robinson, Andrew Tate, and Kanye West.
It was the end of a dream that had begun nearly 20 years earlier.
Young, tech-savvy people partying and using mobile devices.
Among hipsters and high school kids, Twittering is all the rage.
Do you Twitter?
It asks users one simple question. What are you doing?
T-W-T-T, Twitter.
Why do so many people want so many other people to know everything about them?
Twitter's creators said they wanted to connect the world and make it a better place.
People are using it for activism.
The smallest voices in the world should be heard.
A platform, in order to be a platform, has to be free.
All the tweets.
World leaders are on it. Celebrities are on it.
Boom! It's in their brains.
What is happening?
A man does a goofy dance.
This is the story of how their dream of a digital utopia turned sour when they failed to control the dark side of their creation.
All of them!
So, are we the bad guys?
Elon Musk raises his arm, reminiscent of a Nazi salute. Twitter, breaking the bird.
Please introduce yourself.
I'm Biz Stone.
I'm Jack Dorsey.
Evan Williams.
And who are you? What do you do?
I'm Biz Stone.
In 2005, let's see.
A nondescript building.
We're just a ragtag group of people in a crummy office in San Francisco. Just trying to, like, break new ground on new ideas in a tech startup. I was just really excited about the possibilities.
And there's just Evan in there.
Back then, it was really exciting. It was fun. It was like anything's possible. And we really believed in the promise of the internet and the promise of the democratization of media and everybody having a voice. There was just a sense that something was happening.
A few miles away from their downtown office in South Park, San Francisco, social media is exploding across Silicon Valley. Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, and MySpace are all starting to reshape how the world connects. Ev Williams wants his startup to be part of this revolution.
My favorite thing is getting together with people and inventing stuff, building stuff, coming up with new ideas, collaborating, like, oh, we do this. It's a blast.
When you have amazing people and really creative people, there's just this unbounded creativity and potential that's in front of you.
Every so often throughout the
One day, Jack came into the office and he wore a t-shirt that he had printed himself. And it was a white t-shirt with big black letters, and it had his phone number on it. And it was a social experiment to see, as he walked around San Francisco, whether or not anyone would call him. And if they did call the number, he would answer it, and then he would have a conversation with the person.
Was there someone who was skilled in the ways of the piñata? I think
it was lively. There were a lot of characters. It was a lot of fun.
Grab the rope.
It was very inventive.
see Buzz real quick and say goodbye.
It's cool.
We were a real mix of like actual anarchists and, you know, people who were dreamers, like people who like, you know, believe in a world that could be created through the internet.
We were writing ideas on whiteboards, kind of typical small startup where you show up every day and you try to invent the future. And we did what we called a hackathon. I want to make something cool.
Everybody in the company was invited to take their favorite interesting ideas and interesting software or things they had always wanted to build, and we all sort of put them on the virtual table.
At that moment, the internet wasn't quite yet on our phones. Now, this is pre-iPhone, but we sensed it. It was like, this is gonna happen on the phones. Let's like poke around and figure out what the right, you know, version of that is.
Something like pictures with your phone, like share a photo. I don't know, what? Something easy, like one photo a day or something.
It was Hellodio that let you record with your webcam short videos and post them to MySpace.
Something to do with album covers or something to do with music. What are you listening to or something like this?
Jack and I had been finding every reason to work on projects together. It's like when you're a little kid and you're in gym class and the teacher says, like, find a partner. It was like, I want Jack. Jack was like, what about like status updates where you can look at your group of friends and you don't even have to ask them how are they feeling or what are they thinking or whatever. You could just see it. And he said, do you think that's enough of a thing to make a whole thing out of? And I was like, I love it. It's so simple. It's so simple that you could type something on the web and it would make someone's pocket buzz. And then they would look, you know, fumble and take out their phone and see a message. And it was just, we got excited about it. And nobody thought it was a good idea.
Jack's first idea was to list your friends and what they were doing. And that's it. But I thought what felt novel and new ground was right now. Like, oh, what's happening right now? And that felt intriguing. As that idea was evolving, we were trying to come up with a name.
Someone suggested ketchup, because you could catch up with your friends. And someone suggested Friendstalker.
Friendstalker, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
One of our coworkers, Noah Glass, liked the word jitter, and then he had a rhyming dictionary.
Noah sits in the back of the office, and he starts with A, and he looks at every page for weeks until, and like writing down the names he thinks might be good names, until he gets to TW. And he discovers that Twitter is a word which is the short bits of communication between birds.
So you guys, this word is part, it means, it like describes what we're talking about, and it has a reference to nature and birds like that. It's perfect.
Twitter. That's a great name.
So after 2 weeks working on, you know, coding and stuff, Jack was hooking things up in the background. He was doing the programming and he was saying, hey, I'm about to hook up so that when you write something into the field on the website, it should go to the phone. It should go to my phone. He's like, are you ready?
Just setting up my Twitter is typed up. A photo of young Jack from Flickr.
We built Twitter in 2 weeks, and after that, we invited friends, and then invite, invite, invite.
You could hear everyone's phones buzzing, basically. There was something that was easy about it, that was seductive about it.
That interaction, it's just, it feels electric.
SMS was limited to 160 characters. So we started limiting tweets to 150 minus the length of your username. I think Jack just decided every message will only be 140 characters. We embraced the constraint.
You make the canvas very small, and then anything you put on it is a masterpiece.
And you know what most people said when we signed them up for, like, we got them using Twitter and we showed it to them? They're like, this is the stupidest thing ever. And then some people would say, this is the stupidest thing ever, and become utterly addicted to it.
January 2007, Twitter users 21,000. A YouTube video of a busy street, Austin, Texas.
I'm by Southwest, 2007.
Exactly what I'm talking about.
March 2007.
Twitter needs to break out of its San Francisco bubble and connect with the wider tech community. They head to a music festival, South by Southwest.
This was a music and film festival, and then we'll let some nerds show up to talk about the internet for a while.
So Ev had this idea, we should do a marketing thing.
Everyone hangs out in the hallway around the conference room where they have the panels. So we put up a screen in the hallway.
Hi, Twitter. Panels, hallways, or parties?
There was a lot of people there. You could send something on your phone, it would show up on the screen, and you were able to see sort of which session was interesting, which parties were people planning to go to. It was this way in which people felt like, oh, like, I need to be a part of this.
Twitter felt like this massive, huge group text where just everyone was letting everyone know about everything that was cool that was happening. We would be glued to our phones, like walking down the sidewalk, looking at like, oh wait, oh, there's a cool party happening here and there's a bunch of people over here. And because all of us bloggers and tech people were there using it, it just became this instant way of meeting up with people.
What was just totally amazing was the story of this guy who had gone to this party and it was really loud and crowded and it was too loud and crowded. He wanted to talk shop with fellow nerds. So he sent out a tweet saying, does anyone want to meet over at this other place? And it was because he had sent the tweet to all the people that follow him, and then they had sent the tweet saying, we're going here, we're going here, we're going. It just multiplied like crazy. And it was within like, you know, a couple of minutes or something. The place was completely filled and it was a line around the block to get in. As soon as I heard that, I remember thinking, oh my God, there isn't anything like this in among humans. There's no technology that can make this behavior happen. From what I understand, like birds flying together in a flock and then coming to a tree and then moving around it as if they're one organism. And I thought there's a lot of those types of things in nature, but this is the first time I've ever heard of one person able to mobilize hundreds of people within like 2 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, I think we invented a whole new thing.
A murmuration of starlings in the sky. April 2007, Twitter users 100,000. Twitter headquarters, South Park, San Francisco.
Where are we anyways?
We're at Twitter headquarters.
Twitter headquarters?
Yeah. In beautiful South Park, San Francisco.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And who are you?
I'm Biz Stone.
Now, what happened yesterday?
Oh, we got funding for Twitter.
Twitter receives $5 million in venture capital funding. Ev becomes the largest shareholder and must now appoint a CEO to run the new company.
Looking around the room, Jack was, you know, the driver of the idea from day one. So I was like, run with it.
Jack Dorsey, Twitter's daddy.
CEO, right?
Right.
I was happy to give him the shot, but growth started to be the really hard problem. It started growing more quickly than we could handle. It's like you're playing a video game. You get better as you're playing the game, and it depends on how fast the video game gets hard. It doesn't get hard faster than you get better. And Twitter got very hard, very fast.
A photo of Ariel Waldman.
I was in a situation where I had a stalker, and that stalker followed me online.
A tweet looks like a crack whore.
Different social networks would often take the harassing or abusive post down, and that was what was standard. But then when I would go to Twitter, they weren't willing to do that.
Less than a year into the job, Jack is facing the first evidence that Twitter has a dark side.
After South by Southwest, I would regularly go to lunches with people from Twitter. And I had known Jack as a, you know, acquaintance. So I had this phone call with Jack, and there was a concern from him about, well, if we you know, remove this account, if we remove these posts, that's not going to stop your stalker. It's like, this isn't about your responsibility to take care of my stalker. This is about your service being used to threaten and harass someone.
A raft of abusive messages being typed out.
No, you should absolutely ban this user. But at the extreme least, at least you should send a warning, letting them know that they're violating your terms of service. At minimum, that's what I requested. My impression of Jack on this phone call was someone who is kind and listening, but not necessarily understanding. Someone who seemed a little bit confused about why this was their problem. About a month later, after 8 more instances of abuse and harassment, this is the reply that I got from Jack. Ariel, apologies for the delay here. We've reviewed the matter and decided it is not in our best interest to get involved. We've tasked our lawyers with a full review and update of our terms of service. Thank you for your patience and understanding, and good luck with resolving the problem. Best, Jack.
Ariel raises her eyebrows and smiles. The sun shines on a graffitied wall.
There's a very strong tension between being open in a way that allows everybody to have a voice and to create a civil place where trash doesn't take over. And because of the speed of growth, you could say in retrospect, we weren't as focused on the negatives as we should have been in the early days. There's a lot going on.
I think it was Ev who originally coined the term hallucinogenically optimistic. And that's what we were. That's what we were like. You know, everyone's great. Everyone's very well behaved.
The internet is swarming with sexual predators who constantly stalk chat rooms searching for children. But Del Harvey is fighting back by hunting down online pedophiles and bringing them to justice. Please welcome from pervertedjustice.com, Del Harvey. Del, what is it that you do exactly?
Well, essentially, the organization goes into online chat rooms with underage profiles. And if adults then contact those underage profiles and solicit them for sex, we then contact the police and work with them to prosecute and convict them.
To trap them, essentially.
Yes. Del Harvey is hired to manage any problems with content.
These chat rooms, and you're going back.
I started out as the first person on what was originally called spam and abuse. As they came across something new and awful, they would be like, Del, it looks like this is yours. There's this analogy that I used, which is an engineer comes to you and they're like, I've made the perfect kitten. It doesn't need food, doesn't need water. It will never grow old, it will never die. It is the perfect kitten. And you look at the kitten and you're like, why can this kitten shoot bullets? And they're like, well, that's not what you're supposed to use the kitten for. I told you all the things the kitten was intended to be used for. And I'm like, yes. And someone, whether accidentally or on purpose, is going to shoot a bullet with this kitten.
Del was in charge of, you know, spam and abuse or something like that. Who wants to be on that team? That sounds terrible. Let's make it trust and safety.
When I started Twitter, they just asked me to come up with a plan for spam. I came up with a 3 strikes policy of, you know, warning, second warning, then you're out. And I was like, okay, guys, when do you want to meet and go through it? And they're like, no, we're sure it's fine. And I was like, oh.
There's a lot going on. I wouldn't say we spent no time on it, but other people are thinking about this stuff a lot. I'm trusting people who I think are very good, and they were.
I mean, at that point, they were really more focused on keeping the site up. I'd be like, guys, my, this isn't working. And they're like, yes, nothing is working. The whole site is down.
Whenever demand spikes, the site can't cope, and it crashes constantly.
If you've never played Jenga, it was like that. When something broke, the whole pile fell down in a big mess. It would break so often, that I was like, well, we need something right away to at least say, like, hey, you know, we feel bad about it, you know? I came across this really cute image of a whale being lifted up by a bunch of little birds. I thought, oh, this is a good metaphor. They're like, we're all working hard on a big job to fix the thing. People nicknamed it the fail whale. And then this weird thing happened, and it got popular. I got invited to speak at the Fail Whale Conference. People got tattoos of it.
When you go to the Twitter site, it's got the cute little whale, and it's all the light blue picture and everything.
It showed up so much that it kind of became a cultural fetish object of its own. The image of the whale itself became identified with this era.
You summoned the Fail Whale!
An animation of the white whale being carried by orange birds.
So we'd always be like, oh, the Fail Whale again. And it's because they had a surge in usage or they're just incompetent. They constantly were down, and people were worried about the ability of the company to stay afloat because they couldn't run their service.
We'd raised funding, and the pressure's on to make it grow, and we're just still in survival mode. Like, is this thing going to work is still the question. I'm emailing Jack, like, what are we going to do to make it grow? That started to get very, very stressful. It was Jack's job to make it work. He's running the company.
Is Jack going to be the chief executive that, like, goes through a hypergrowth phase? Is Jack going to be the one to stop the fail whale? Is Jack going to be the CEO that's there to take you public, who, like, you know, investment banks are going to look at and say, yeah, that's someone we can do business with? And it just didn't seem credible, at least to me.
An old photo of Jack wearing sunglasses and holding up a phone.
People saying, like, well, also he was, like, you know, leaving at 5 and taking these classes after work.
Jack has an eclectic range of outside interests: yoga, sailing, drawing, and tailoring.
I really wanted to see the world. I wanted to be a sailor. And I really wanted to be an artist. I wanted to create something. I wanted to show the world a new way to see itself.
We had a company. We had money. We weren't just college kids in a garage. We were a venture-funded company. And it was just sort of, it was a mess. Jack didn't have the experience, and it felt very high stakes.
The people who decided to fire Jack, in my head, it was just the board, quote unquote, but it was really the people, it was the people I worked with. And it was Evan, Jason Goldman, and some of our investors.
That sucks. Like, it sucks. Like, you don't go into it, like, sort of hoping that the CEO fails.
Ev totally understood what Twitter could do and was frustrated with how it was being led and decided that he wanted to take a turn. And it was his company to choose.
Yeah, we fired him as CEO of a company he co-founded, and he didn't really see it coming, and that's bad. And, you know, he was very upset. He was very upset.
So you all just fired him? Ev was like, yeah. So he's just wandering around somewhere, feeling really upset and alone. And I was like, oh yeah, I guess so.
Jack tweets, calling my parents.
I could have taken that idea, not told it to Ev, not told it to Biz, not told it to all my other coworkers, and tried to start my own company with that idea. But we had a great team.
So I found him and we met up at the Whole Foods where we used to have lunch a lot. Jack was, yeah, like, he just felt terrible. He said, well, I'm going to go back to the office. I'm going to tell everybody what I really feel, that this was horrible. I feel like I've been punched in the gut. This was a bad decision. And I said, no, I don't think you should do that. You're still the man. Like, it's still a thing. You just don't get to work here every day.
Jack's impassive expression slowly turns to a smile.
I was angry. I was angry at the board. I was angry at my co-founders, I was angry at myself.
I remember him saying this, I'll come back like Steve Jobs. And I remember thinking, like, whatever makes you feel better.
Beneath cloudy blue skies, a vast expanse of residential streets lined with trees, with hills in the distance.
After Jack was fired as CEO, he stayed on the board as chairman. But in the 2 years after he's fired, he refuses to speak in board meetings, like literally never says a word again.
This is Lady Gaga, queen of Twitter. May you always have soft cuticles while tweeting. May you never have carpal tunnel.
With Lady Gaga leading the way, Twitter has become a magnet for celebrities, just as Ev takes over as CEO.
The Executives with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm doing an interview.
The future is here, and things like Twitter allow, you know, you to cut out the actual middleman.
I'm a Twitterer, and I am obsessed with Twitter.
I just type something in to my iPhone, and boom, it's in their brains.
Where you have celebrities on Twitter, you feel like you are part of the ephemeral of their lives. There's an intimacy that you share on social media that you don't share on other things. And that was always there from the very beginning.
It's like, hi, I'm putting on a sock. And I've got 400,000 people reading this.
So anybody here on Twitter? Hi, it's Friday Live, and I'm on Twitter for the first time. Sitting next to me is Evan Williams, the co-founder of Twitter. Can you believe all this Tweedledee stuff going on?
If you make a list of the best possible things that could happen, going on Oprah may be number one.
But I hear you're a small company.
We're about 35 people right now.
That's going to change, Evan.
Right.
Yeah. That's going to change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was going to send her first tweet. Her producer was like, treat her like she's a kindergartner when it comes to the computer. She types in her first tweet, and then, by mistake, she hits refresh on the browser, and we lose what she typed in the box. So her first tweet, it disappeared. But then they cut to commercial. So I take the laptop back, and I retype her tweet and hit submit. And so I actually sent Oprah's first tweet, but I don't think anyone noticed.
Have a great weekend, Twitterers!
I think we had 400,000 signups that day. Twitter just captured media attention in a way that almost nothing else did.
Like celebrities, democracy activists discover Twitter gives them a direct line to their followers.
2009, Tehran, Iran.
It is a political protest wrapped in a technological revolution.
Call it the Twitter effect.
It's helping getting information out.
People are using it for activism. World leaders are on it, celebrities are on it. And we're like 30 people in an office in San Francisco. What is happening? The implications of this are far bigger than just like the users of our little website talking to each other.
All Twitter posts have to be short. Some find it limiting. But as one posting read today, 140 characters is a novel that you're being shot at.
Scores of protesters.
We had lots of utopian thinking that, like, we have this new tool of liberation, and because we can all connect in this new way, all social problems will be easily dealt with.
A crowd of people dancing.
See your thing blowing up and everybody using it and talking about it. And we were pretty optimistic at that time. This is great. This is providing this information, awareness, knowledge that was not there before. And it's changing the world.
While Twitter is saving the world, Kanye West turns up at the office and performs an impromptu freestyle rap. But the company is still failing to deal with the tech problems that have plagued it from day one.
Pour the champagne, let your watch show. Shorty got a man watch, wrist look colossal.
I wish I could say, man, isn't it going great? We were on Oprah and like Kanye's coming by and like it's going awesome. But the reality is like the service didn't work very well. And so it was just like, we're gonna lose what's possible with this company. I mean, how are we not going to mess this up?
In phone footage from the office, people clap for Kanye.
You have to imagine She's just showing up to a very hard job every day. It's very exciting, but you feel like the whole thing could die at any moment. And so my efforts and the team's efforts, 90% are, how do we survive?
It didn't work a lot, and it was a site that had to work perfectly all the time, and it didn't. Nothing else went down like that, I'll tell you. Facebook didn't, Google never did.
The time that really sticks out to me about that was Medvedev, the time the president of Russia, comes to Twitter. And he's going to tweet after he's created his account. Like, wow. And the site goes down. Literally, no joke, the site crashes.
You've got snipers on the roof, bomb-sniffing dogs, local law enforcement, Secret Service, a bunch of Russians in John Wick outfits. That morning at 8 a.m., the U.S. scores a goal in stoppage time in the World Cup to avoid elimination. Everyone tweets goal at the same time, and the site goes down hard. Dmitry Medvedev, who's like all 5'7" and wearing a denim suit for some reason, is touring our cafeteria and is gonna send the first tweet with like the political press corps covering this. For security reasons, they shut down the elevators. And I am in the third floor and I've gotta get to the sixth floor. I've gotta get past like the German shepherds and like the bomb squad and like the counter assault team. And like get up to the sixth floor and be like, stall.
We were like, oh, why don't we show you around? Like, oh God, what are we gonna do? Like, we had to walk real slow and we were like, over here is the restroom. You have to use it. You could use it. If you want to use it, take your time. There's no rush.
When the windows are open, it's a lot better view.
Yeah,
it's a nice view.
I'm now up there. I've like been calling down to the third floor. Is it okay for him to tweet? Yes, we think it will go through. It's like, okay.
There we go.
All right.
Greetings to everyone, he says. I'm at Twitter, and this is my first tweet.
I remember thinking, like, yeah, this is an example of, like, hey, we need to get serious about, like, getting this place buttoned up.
Twitter's technical issues cripple its growth and deter crucial investment in its future.
Twitter has always underperformed all the time. It's really kind of hysterical how bad they are. It's the loudest platform and the saddest little business.
Why, you know, as entrepreneurs, why are you so little focused on the dollars at this point?
I wouldn't say we're not focused on the dollars. We're trying to take a really long-term perspective about how we build a valuable and large company. That takes time, and we only have so many resources.
A Flickr photo of Jason, Biz, and Evan.
My spidey sense started to indicate that maybe Ev had started to kind of lose the plot with some of the board.
I thought things were going reasonably well, given the chaotic nature of this beast we had created. But there were complaints, and then I was kneecapped. Somehow I had lost enough control to be fired without notice. I just went from running a company that I owned 100% of a little, you know, a few years earlier, to I was out. After the whole thing, I was really hurt. I kind of wanted to crawl into a hole and leave. But also, like, I helped do the same thing to Jack, you know, years before, and so maybe it's karma. So I'm like, why is my friend being fired? What's happened? I'm like, I don't understand why people are behaving like this. It took me a long time to realize money and power.
A man with glasses.
Dick Costolo, Twitter's chief operating officer and a seasoned businessman, takes over from Ev.
Yeah, all the rooms are named for birds.
Yeah. Oh, I want that. I definitely want that one.
When I first started at Twitter as CEO, I think it's fair to say that I thought it was a little too, like, lax.
Let me get a wide shot. And then we'll
I was on the elevator at one point, and one of the people on the team was like, the site crashed again. And he kind of laughed. You know, I remember thinking like, man, I mean, enough is enough, you know. The two things we had to do were start to make money and stop the site from crashing.
Thanks, Kelly.
Dick knew user growth was going to be a massive thing that we needed. We need to have a reliable site. So his number one priority was killing the fail whale.
Dick orders his engineers to focus on one thing only, rebuilding the site from the bottom up.
Like redoing the underlying architecture so that we can add more users and add more tweets per second without taking the system down was a Herculean effort.
They thought it was impossible. They thought this isn't gonna work. And Dick was just like, it has to be possible. 5 months later, we killed the fail whale and it never came back.
I mean, it's crazy to think about, but it was like a momentous occasion in the company.
Twitter's account tweets, "Nobody misses the fail whale." March 2011, monthly active users, 68 million.
So now the CEO is a guy that we hired from outside of Twitter. And I don't know how many months later it was, but that was like, what am I doing? What should I do, you know? So I said, hey, Dick, I'm thinking I'm just gonna leave and go work with Ev down the street. And he's like, okay. I was like, all right, that was easy.
I think it was a mistake to get rid of the founders. And it's because the founders of companies have the vision of where it comes from. And if you come in as a takeover CEO and you don't have people in the room that were there from the beginning, then you lose the threat.
We go around the room and introduce yourself.
So when Biz went off with Ev to do his new thing, I mean, people look at me like, the business guy is now in charge of the whole company. So I decided we need to have one of the founders back at Twitter.
Dick tweets, excited that Jack will be returning to the company as executive chairman.
Dick was going to focus on the monetization of the business, growing globally, you know, make the right strategic moves to build Twitter.
Jack and Dick smile.
Jack wanted to keep Twitter truly like an open global town square where everyone of all different views can come together and speak openly.
I didn't meet Jack until he came back. And that was just weird. For a lot of reasons. Jack's weird. I mean, this is not going to be the first time you hear this. This is not going to be the last time you hear it. Jack's weird. And weird in a way that I can't even begin to describe. And I've met a lot of weird people.
There was one meeting where he started off the meeting by just playing the Beatles song Blackbird, kind of the plaintive music, quiet music, in the room.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You were only waiting for this moment to arise.
He gets up on stage and everyone is dead silent.
It seemed very conceptual. He showed pictures of a bridge. For some people, I think it was really meaningful and meant something to them. A bunch of other people were like, what in the actual heck is this supposed to mean to me?
Like, what is happening?
Is this just a bird-themed song that you're using while talking about Twitter taking flight? Okay. And yes, it was like a big moment. People were teary-eyed. It felt like this big moment, you know.
There was a great deal of respect for Jack across the employee base. And Jack was as close to anyone on this planet in terms of what we wanted Twitter to be. And he had that founder authority.
Outrage in a St. Louis community today after an unarmed teen was shot and killed by police.
We are Mike Brown! We are Mike Brown! We are...
You must disperse immediately. You are in violation of the state-imposed curfew.
The death of Mike Brown, a young African-American, sparks months of protests, helping ignite the Black Lives Matter movement.
Protesters walking the street, remembering Michael Brown, demanding justice by tweeting it all out on their smartphones and tablets. Their ability to do that, defined in part by this very ordinary-looking guy who took to the streets himself yesterday. St. Louis native Jack Dorsey is the billionaire co-founder of Twitter.
I was just wondering whether we can we just have a few words with you?
No.
No, you're not chatting?
I have my microphone and I'm done.
Okay, so we need to look you up online. Okay.
I'm there. I'm easy to find.
Okay.
I remember being in Ferguson, Missouri, and all of a sudden I look up and there's this white guy in a t-shirt and a hat, and I'm like, I think that's the Twitter guy. I'm like, I feel pretty confident this is the Twitter guy. What I appreciated about Jack was that it was solidarity without, you know, he made the Stay Woke t-shirts, he like cared, he was willing to like be upfront and public about it without apologizing. And I respected that because a lot of people, especially in tech at the time, were like hedging their bets around. And he was like, I was at the protest. And you're like, yes, you were at the protest, you know?
Jack tweets, we young, we strong, we marching all night long.
No peace.
On one screen, I have the CNN website and Fox News and MSNBC. And on the other, I have my Twitter streams. And I'm watching photos of fires and police overreacting and militarized vehicles and people being arrested and beat. There is nothing on MSNBC or Fox or CNN. People there are saying we're being tear gassed, and the police are like we're not using tear gas. And I'm looking at a picture of a tear gas canister on the ground for my Twitter feed. Twitter fundamentally changed a lot of how the public perceives this mainstream media. And sometimes I think about that as it's been a good thing and maybe not such a good thing.
With Twitter spreading the message, protests mount across America.
There is a reason that Black Lives Matter started out as a hashtag. The social media platforms gave the people an ability to have a voice and have connection and reach an audience and build a network.
Does a platform have to be neutral?
I think a platform is best when it carries every voice.
You carry every voice, but you've got an opinion. You're wearing a Stay Woke shirt. You went out and protested in Ferguson.
Yeah.
Your politics, seems like we could identify what some of your politics are.
I do believe we need to build a platform that respects and amplifies every voice in a way that the world needs to hear it.
We said we're the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party. You know, the notion that the smallest voices in the world should be heard is 100% true.
There was a real belief that good speech would outweigh bad speech. That the solution was to be radically open. You know, this is how Twitter got the reputation of being the free speech wing of the Free Speech Party.
But the problem is there's always a dark underbelly. How are they going to moderate people being a jerk? It's like a bar that suddenly turns bad, right? If you don't have a bouncer in there, you're going to have a bad situation. And they never had a bouncer.
Tonight, violent depictions of women being beaten, raped, and run over by cars. It's not the movies, it's video games. And now the women calling for change in this multi-billion-dollar virtual industry are facing a very real backlash, including death threats.
Twitter's free speech stance makes it vulnerable when a group of female video game creators are targeted. Known as Gamergate, it's the first coordinated harassment campaign of its kind.
And you could see the aggression that was lurking in the dark recesses of this site.
It's not all fun and games in the world of online gaming. Last weekend, one woman was forced out of her home. She's believed to be the third woman who's needed to go into hiding as a result.
They threatened to murder me, to rape me. They threatened to sever my husband's genitals and choke me to death with them.
Anti-men, anti-gamers, yeah, fuck all of them!
We can't unleash the ability of everyone to communicate and not expect everyone to communicate. And not all of those people are gonna be a reflection of your values.
And if you're one of these feminazis,
she's just fucking dying of fire.
we've obviously already had a policy that was like whack-a-mole. Harm is done. We respond to that harm by warning people and removing tweets. But by that point in 2014, we had a billion tweets about every couple days. So even if you're getting all the bad stuff 99.9999% of the time, that's still a lot of not good stuff slipping through the cracks.
People would say, well, just ban these words. Okay, well, those words are in a Kanye song, so can he not post the lyrics to his song? It turns out it's always more complicated, and there are always consequences you didn't consider that happened next.
Ooh, get ready.
In truth, it's the feminists who are the oppressors.
Misogynistic abuse on Twitter spreads to the UK.
A news interview.
Well, joining me now from our studio in San Francisco is Twitter's head of trust and safety, Del Harvey. Do you accept you've messed this up?
It's a heck of an opening. Thanks for having me here.
I'm like, all right, I think I'm ready for anything. And the first question that they hit me with is, Del Harvey, do you agree that you have failed women?
Del widens her eyes and puffs her cheeks.
Like all of them?
Have you failed these women who have to go to local police forces to report the appalling abuse they're getting on Twitter?
Well, we actually take action on the accounts as is. So I think that...
Have you failed them so far, though?
This highlighted that had some of the tools and systems that I asked for been in place, those accounts would have been suspended without getting to that point.
Honestly, a lot of the tooling that was built to fight abuse was written by interns. It just wasn't a priority. And it wasn't a priority because the majority of people at Twitter weren't ever exposed to the abuse. And I think that was why Del wouldn't get the resources she needed. It's not just a naive philosophy. It's a privileged philosophy.
I want to live in a world where I can actually see all opinions. It's up to me to decide which one is truly valuable. I mean, I think the main purpose of Twitter is to make sure that we let every voice flow.
Jack at the Oxford Union.
It's a great aspirational ideal. If only there weren't certain types of content that were actually inherently damaging for people to be exposed to.
Jack was more of a purist on the free speech issue, I'd say. He can be a bit obtuse at times. You know, I think he would say, go figure out the details for yourself. But the devil is in the details on free speech. That's the problem.
Do you regret going all out on the free speech?
No, I don't, because it was like so inspiring and awesome when it was working. I felt like we were slow to evolve to a more complex understanding of free speech. I wrote an internal email that got published externally about how bad we were at dealing with abuse. We suck at dealing with abuse and trolls on the platform, and we've sucked at it for years. I'm frankly ashamed of how poorly we've dealt with this issue during my tenure as CEO. It's absurd. There's no excuse for it. Signed, me.
When Dick emailed the company, it was like, we suck at abuse. In a lot of ways, my reaction to that was yes, because you haven't invested in combating it.
Twitter's moderation policies are failing.
Crowds of men waving ISIS flags and a tweet reading, follow Sharia.
Islamic State got onto Twitter pretty much the same way as everybody else. They had been creating accounts that had like four variations of their flag, and we started pattern matching those and taking action on those. And so they started changing their profile pictures while they were trying to gain followers to pictures of kittens or puppies. So there were all of these adorable, cute kittens or puppies in the profile picture, and then would be like, ISIS will take revenge on America.
You know, we did do a lot of moderation and taking their accounts down, and so they started to target us.
Twitter CEO Dick Costello confirmed that he and his employees received death threats after deleting accounts associated with ISIS.
Now cut to July 2015. I like getting death threats all the time. I was the target
for all these things that people, the bad things that happen to people, and like doing that on a daily basis after you feel like you've accomplished your goals, is like, enough is enough.
Hey, Julia. Yes,
turn that mic on.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
What do you think you'll do next?
We'll see. I'm going to give myself a bunch of time to take some time off and think about that.
Thanks.
Dick walks off. At a Twitter event, Jack films the stage.
It's official. Jack Dorsey is Twitter's new permanent CEO.
There he is. He's walking in the door. He's right there.
All right, good morning.
8 years after being fired, Jack Dorsey is back on the throne as Twitter's CEO.
It certainly had to be a moment of, I'm back. I mean, there's no way you can be human and have been removed from a role and then asked to please come back and take this role and not think, hell yes. Like, all right, I'm back. I mean, there has to be some of that in your mind or you're not human.
In a room full of people, a banner reading hashtag Hack Week.
Pretty soon after Jack got back as CEO, he started wrapping his head around like what the situation really was.
Dorsey needs to address key problems. Twitter shares are sagging.
There were pressures that you have from investors and advertisers. We'd had two rounds of layoffs. It was not good. It was awful.
Look at Twitter. That company is suffering from zero user growth, okay?
It just stagnated. And in this industry, if you stop growing, you die.
Twitter is facing fierce competition from new platforms like Instagram, which are siphoning off potential users and advertisers. But an unlikely savior emerges.
Presidential campaign 2016.
There's this idea that the goal of the Twitter game is to never be the central character because that's the one everyone is hating on. Trump pushes himself into prominence by learning how to make himself the central villain of every day.
Trump tweets, "Please don't feel so stupid or insecure. It's not your fault."
It was just like, oh, this guy understands how to capture media attention using the platform.
They cannot help the fact that they were born fucked up.
He knew how to, like, write a tweet, and, like, that's what people would report on.
With Twitter at its heart, Trump's campaign gains momentum.
Focusing on the debate tonight, the market could react if Trump has a very good showing. One stock worth watching today, Twitter. Shares jumping more than 4% on Friday.
In the beginning, it was the quote-unquote Trump bump. Advertisers were throwing a heck of a lot of dollars at Twitter because the conversation was there and the people were there.
Trump tweets, "If Hillary can't satisfy her husband, what makes her think she can satisfy America?"
When you are running these places, the thing that creates traffic is anger and rage. And so one of the things I always say was enragement equals engagement.
He made it okay to wear your hate on your sleeve. And he did it in such a way that it made it harder for companies like Twitter to moderate that type of content. When you have 50 million accounts tweeting, retweeting, reposting hate speech, there was content coming out in 2016 where we were imploring Jack to ban him. We're just like, dude, you have got to get this guy off your platform.
Every small act of kindness.
It didn't matter how bad Trump was. He always was using Twitter to dominate the news cycle. And if he was removed, it would be damaging to shareholder value, and the board would remove the CEO.
Between Facebook and Twitter, and I guess Instagram, I have 28 million people. It's a modern form of communication. There should be nothing you should be ashamed of. It's where it's at.
A screen showing Trump's victory, 9th of November, 2016.
Donald J. Trump will soon be
our 45th president.
A female Hillary supporter weeps.
I think it is true that you probably didn't have a lot of Trump supporters or Trump voters in the executive suite of Twitter.
When Trump was elected, I think there was a little bit of a beat inside on, have we enabled Donald Trump to such an extent that it put him into the White House?
I remember HR might have offered the next day off for people who were like emotionally overwhelmed.
A news report, Trump masters social media.
Even more extreme voices now flood the platform.
Islamophobic tweets, one reading, "Our great Britain is not so great anymore. Hashtag ban Islam." A TED talk in 2019.
A lot of people puzzled why, like, how hard is it to get rid of Nazis from Twitter? And we're waiting, and we look in, and you're showing this extraordinary calm, but we're all standing outside saying, "Jack, turn the fucking wheel." I mean, will you do that?
Yeah, yes, and we have been moving substantially. I mean, we are working as quickly as we can, but it's quickness will not get the job done.
Facing mounting criticism, Jack withdraws from the spotlight.
He really withdrew from people. Like, he did a lot of meditation, he did these retreats. It didn't feel like he was really talking to anybody at Twitter.
There ended up being this weird cult of a personality around him. All these, like, lifestyle articles about what his diet is this week and what exercise he does.
Sometimes he'd show up, sometimes he wouldn't. Then he'd lay down a track and then he'd leave. Like that kind of thing. Genius, gotta go. I'm going to Sri Lanka, stare at a finch. I don't know, whatever. He had always on to something like that.
It felt as though there were a lot of performative aspects into how he was presenting himself, and then people wanted to believe that this was, like, here's somebody who was a founder who they could believe in, and then things just got weirder.
In January 2020, there was a huge Twitter-wide conference called One Team in Houston, Texas.
There we go. Okay. We got some sun. How's everyone feeling now?
It was really a blast. I mean, we just had fun. It was a chance for everyone to connect. Jack really wanted just to go back to the roots of the heart of Twitter. Bringing everyone together is just lifting up the culture, you know? Mm-hmm.
That was what we wanted.
At one point, Jack stood in front of 4,000 colleagues and said that he would be leading us in a 15-minute silent meditation.
The packed room is bathed in blue light.
There were, like, little salt juice packets under everybody's seats as, like, the weirdest Oprah check under your seat giveaway you can imagine.
Three emojis on screen. Tap, lemon, salt.
Water, Himalayan salt, and lemon juice.
I mean, listen, I drank the Twitter Kool-Aid, but I didn't do the lemon water.
There were elements of One Team that were absolutely fun, right? And then there's also, like, sometimes the, like, forced fun. Why not dial in Elon Musk to One Team?
Jack says to Musk, give us some direct feedback, critique. What are we doing poorly? What could we be doing better if you were running Twitter? By the way, do you want to run Twitter?
Wow. It's, like, prophetic.
Musk replies, I think it would be helpful to differentiate between is it a botnet or a sort of troll army or something like that.
And then a number of folks got sick. We did have team members, I believe, that were flying through Wuhan to get to One Team.
there was literally a hashtag like one virus that everybody was talking about.
From this evening, I must give the British people a very simple instruction. You must stay at home.
Efforts to contain the fast-spreading coronavirus are being strained as infections and deaths rise rapidly worldwide.
Now there's this technology that is potentially spreading misleading information really rapidly. Like, you know, if you get COVID, all you gotta do is take a gallon of ivermectin and you'll be fine in the morning. That was actually what led us to roll out the first labels around misinformation. We were no longer taking a hands-off approach on this stuff. It probably won't come as a surprise to you that Jack was not a fan of labeling. And he was even less of a fan of removing content. I don't know that we ever convinced Jack that we were right, but we at least got him to sign off on the policies.
The next thing you know, like, we have a misinformation policy. And it was a rushed job, right? Like, the policy was written quickly and constantly changing. And when you start saying, like, something is true or it is not, like, you are becoming an arbiter of truth.
Facts are problematic these days. Like, whose facts? Which facts? Who are they from? Twitter was the perfect place for tons and tons of misinformation about many things, including from Donald Trump, particularly in an election year.
President Trump responding after Twitter flags two of his tweets, the president tweeting, quote, "Twitter is completely stifling free speech, and I, as president, will not allow it to happen."
A Twitter building.
There's a lot of pushback on the censorship of speech. It became a cause celeb for the right to say, like, oh, these companies are run by a bunch of squishy liberals and they're using their tools to, like, oppress us. And so we're gonna have a bunch of hearings.
Mr. Dorsey, who the hell elected you and put you in charge of what the media are allowed to report and what the American people are allowed to hear?
We're not doing that. And this is why I opened this hearing with calls for more transparency. We realize we need to earn trust more. We realize
I think it stopped being fun for Jack. He was so unhappy about having to weigh in. We were trying to figure out what can we do proactively here. We would cast stones and read tea leaves in an attempt to interpret whatever it was that Jack actually wanted.
Joseph R. Biden Jr. is elected the 46th president of the United States, winning the White House and denying President Trump a second term.
It is announced that Joe Biden is the winner. And then the conversation is like, is Donald Trump going to come on the platform and deny the election results, right? Because he was doing it verbally. He did.
We were getting ready for a big celebration. We were winning everything, and all of a sudden it was just called off.
Trump gets on Twitter, starts denying the election results. I remember sending messages to folks in leadership saying, like, I am very concerned about what is going to happen. But there was a fear, we'll go too far, we'll piss Donald Trump off, like, something will happen. Indecision became the decision. And then came the morning of January 6th.
6th of January, 2021.
I am not allowed to say what's going to happen today because everyone's just going to have to watch for themselves. But it's going to happen.
I was literally on Twitter, right? Like, I was on Twitter.com, scrolling, seeing what was happening.
Twitter safety tweets, "We'll continue to evaluate the situation in real time."
I had gotten called into a meeting when the Capitol was breached. Hashtag execute Mike Pence is trending.
A makeshift gallows in front of the Capitol.
And I was given the instructions, make the insurrection stop. In a couple of hours, we had new guidance that was drafted specifically for January 6th. And you know, we started taking down tweets,
so
right?
It was a real nightmare scenario unfolding. So many entrances and tunnels and mazes. It was amazing.
And then Trump starts tweeting.
There's never been a time like this where such a thing happened, where they could take it away from all of us, from me, from you, from our country. This was a fraudulent election.
A Trump tweet has been removed.
So we didn't really have a choice but to take it down and suspend the account. We said if there are any other violations of any kind, this account will be permanently suspended.
48 hours later, Trump's temporary suspension is over. He starts tweeting again.
You'll never take back our country with weakness.
The responses to his tweets were like, message heard loud and clear.
You have to show strength and you have to be strong.
We got it. We know what to do. It was very much this dog whistle of violence.
With Trump deemed to have violated Twitter's rules yet again, a decision must now be made.
Because it's Donald Trump, goes up to Jack Dorsey, who was in French Polynesia on his yacht.
A yacht floats on calm seas beneath an orange sunset.
I think Jack was very concerned about, are we biased in our enforcement? This goes against so many things that he really passionately believed. But the degree to which people were taking this as a call to violence was clear. I think that's why when we made the recommendation to ban the president, there was not pushback.
And so Donald Trump was kicked off of Twitter.
Twitter safety's tweet announcing Trump's suspension. Jack on stage in a crowded hall. A woman calls out, "You are the king of censorship. Censorship is a human rights violation. You are censoring people. You are interfering in elections. You techno-fascist."
Everyone telling you that you're responsible for the ruin of politics around the world sucks. It sounds miserable. I mean, would you want that?
Jack's tweet announcing his resignation.
The social media and business world was rocked today by the surprise resignation of Jack Dorsey as CEO of Twitter.
So I think that in some ways, Jack may have been struggling with a company that was going in a direction very different from the direction that he hoped for.
As the only significant shareholder on the board, Jack still holds power over Twitter's future. For Jack, only one person can now restore Twitter to being the platform where all voices can be heard.
I think what he decided to do in the first instance was just to say, I'm going to quit and turn the company over to someone else. But then he came up with idea two, which was maybe Elon should just buy it.
Jack and Elon were very friendly, and Elon has proven himself at other organizations. Is there anyone else on earth that could best figure this thing out? And I think he turned to his friend, Elon.
Any more comments?
Were you guys listening? But I'm curious what you guys think.
Breaking news, Twitter has just accepted Elon Musk's offer. Twitter will become a privately owned company by Elon Musk.
Musk dances awkwardly on stage. A tweet with "Elon is the singular solution I trust" highlighted.
Jack's tweet about how Elon was the singular solution and the light of consciousness that he would trust to lead Twitter seemed like it was just gonna clearly be one of the worst tweets of all time.
Like, how did you come up with he's the only one that can fix Twitter? I wanna know, what evidence did you have that he could do that?
It went from being something that we tried very hard to not have be a political tool, in a lot of ways, to a political tool.
Elon Musk says he would reverse former President Trump's ban on the social media platform. Musk calling the ban morally wrong.
Musk reinstates thousands of banned accounts and rolls back restrictions on misleading information. He lays off around 80% of the staff working to reduce harmful content.
Elon decimated the trust and safety team. He didn't care about it. He didn't care about trust or safety. It was a real mistake. It was a real mistake to do that.
I didn't think Elon would destroy Twitter or tear it apart the way he did.
Elon's purchase of Twitter was very calculated. I think he wanted more power. You know, he is shifting rightward. I could see it.
Some of Musk's tweets, including one that says it was incredibly racist for ADL to say that only white people can be racist. Jack wearing his hashtag Stay Woke t-shirt.
Here we are at the merch thing, and there's an entire closet full of
secret closet
of hashtag woke.
The woke mind virus is either defeated or nothing else matters.
There's this narrative of Jack Dorsey the benevolent and like Elon Musk the evil in the sort of wicked versus good, right? And I think it does us a disservice to make these like fairy tales out of this story. If the Twitter of yesteryear was so perfect, how did it crumble so fast, right? Clearly the foundation wasn't as good as a lot of people thought that it was.
What all of us were doing was democratizing the means of communications. But the reality is that you can't have universal free speech because the speech of some silences the speech of others. Everybody always sees it subjectively. Why don't you moderate those bad people? Why are you censoring me?
The social media site Twitter is going through a radical rebrand. Elon Musk, who owns it, of course, says it's now called X.
Elon reinstated my Twitter account after taking it back. Personally.
My name is Katie Hopkins. I am a straight, white Christian.
Come on, get back.
It's good to be back on Twitter. Don't believe what you read. Don't believe the mainstream. Talk to this gentleman. This gentleman in.
It turns out that Twitter is harder than rocket science.
Musk waves to crowds.
It's actually really, really, really sad because people really believed in Jack. Part of what has been so hard about what's happened has been the really sense of deep personal betrayal that a lot of employees have felt.
The Twitter sign is taken down.
It's hard to be like very kind of pro the Twitter legacy at this point. It's gonna be remembered for this long tail of knock-on effects of people trying to advance right-wing authoritarianism and explicitly anti-democratic agenda, both domestically but also across the world.
The X sign looms over the building.
We built this thing that took on a life of its own. It has these bad elements and these good elements. And the battle is trying to have the good outweigh the bad. And that's what felt like is maybe a losing battle over time. It's like, is it worth it?
And there's Mr. Evan in there.
Is this whole idea flawed?
Ooh!
Is social media good? Or is it just like, was it a bad idea? Was it just the wrong idea? Should we just move on? Should we say, hey, that was an interesting experiment. Goofy things happened.
I'm Biz Stone.
We had some laughs. And let's move on. I don't know.
In 2017, almost 9 years after Ariel Waldman's initial complaint, Jack Dorsey responded to her in a tweet, stating, "We move too slow. We are fixing. It will take time."
He wants to shape our future, but what's that got to do with Batman? X-Man, the Elon Musk origin story. Listen now on Sounds. Undercover to catch the fraudsters, leaving a very bad taste, hunting the whiskey bandits on iPlayer.